deep into that research to see if they're legit or not, because there are a lot of god-awful projects, like the worst projects on the planet. And if you don't do your research, you can't necessarily sometimes determine that. So that's what I wanted to dive into today, like the process that I go through from a fundamental analysis perspective, and how you can maybe leverage some of that to kind of improve how you look at the crypto game. So what is fundamental analysis? From Investopedia, I trust you guys can read, so I'm not going to repeat it too much. But really, the big thing about fundamental analysis is looking at the macro elements of a security and the micro elements of a security, and trying to come up with a quantitative assessment of what the value is, and then comparing that to the current valuation. So if you use like a fundamental analysis example, if you're looking at Apple stock's trading at $1.50, you run some fundamental analysis on it, and you find out that, hey, because of the macro effects, the economy's growing, whatever, it's actually worth $200. I'm going to buy that because I'm going to go long on Apple because I think there's a $50 difference there, and I'm going to make that trade. The tough part about all that is with crypto, it's a totally different ballgame. When you look at how fundamental analysis differs with crypto, it's really, I know we've said the wild, wild west. With crypto, there are no earnings. There's no revenue. There's no PE ratio. There's a lot of the traditional metrics that people in the financial world use to value assets, used to value securities. They're not utilized at all with cryptocurrency. So how do you actually go through the process of trying to figure out somewhat of a fair valuation for those cryptocurrencies? And that is one of the things that I think a lot of people struggle with. There are a lot of people out there that might try to apply some type of, maybe it's an algorithm, maybe they have a specific formula that they use to come up with the proper value behind Bitcoin, or the true value behind Bitcoin or Ethereum or something else, whether it's transaction volume or NVT or a number of other things. There are a whole sort of formulas that people use, and none of them have been proven to be right at all. So anybody who's kind of applying those formulas, that's really all, at this point in time, an educated guess. And here's a tweet that was actually yesterday. I thought it was a really timely tweet. But Ari Paul, who is one of my favorite people in the crypto investing game, I think one of the brightest people out there, had this to say: no one knows much about cryptocurrency. The most basic questions about consensus mechanisms, engineering, competitive strategy, economic forces are empirically unproven and debated by the top experts in those subfields. With study and deep thought, it's really all just educated guesses. And I really do believe that. Most people at this point in time, we're all just kind of guessing when it comes down to how to properly value something. So before I hop into it too, like, does fundamental analysis always work? The answer is no, and I'll provide two quick examples. First, DentaCoin. Anybody here ever buy DentaCoin? Yeah. Dentist on the blockchain, great investment, right? That's a great project. So DentaCoin went from, maybe $50 million in valuation to $2 billion over the course of 3 weeks. You run some fundamental analysis on that. You look at that, you see the projects. Timeline was, I think, a year away from actually doing anything substantial. I hope nobody from DentaCoin is in the audience. They're a year away from doing really anything. So there's no logical reason when you're performing analysis on that cryptocurrency that it would go from $50 million to $2 billion. That's ridiculous, but it did. The same can be said about Dogecoin. Dogecoin is what got me into cryptocurrency in the first place. If it wasn't for Dogecoin in 2013, I probably wouldn't be here right now mining it on a broken laptop that is now even further broken and burnt out. But Dogecoin is now, at least, it at one point in time in 2013, 2014, was one of the more interesting projects in crypto. I donated to send the Jamaican bobsled team to the Olympics. I donated to have a NASCAR driver riding around a track with a massive Dogecoin logo on the front of it. But the project, for the most part, has kind of been abandoned. Yet, a couple months ago, Dogecoin went from $400 million in valuation to $2 billion in valuation. Is there anything fundamentally driving that? Not at all. But things pump in the crypto world that you can't describe. There's no reason. So you do have to take that into consideration when you look at any of these things moving forward. And just going to my favorite friend Dogecoin, there it is, back when, 2014. Unfortunately, the driver, I think Josh Wise, retired. So no more Dogecoin on the NASCAR, but it was fun while it lasted. So when I look at performing fundamental analysis, a couple big things that people just don't do. The first thing is just reading the damn white paper. Like, whether it's an ICO, an upcoming ICO, if it's an existing project, some white papers are 15 pages, some are 40 pages, some are 50 pages. If you're going to put a dollar into a cryptocurrency, you should probably know what you're putting your money into. So read the white paper and go through that process of actually understanding what you're putting your money behind. Otherwise, you know, it's all just an educated guess, but you're literally just throwing darts blind if you're not at least reading the white paper. A couple other, I think, steps that are really key about this process. First, if there is a product to actually demo, if there's an alpha version, if there's a beta version, or if it's actually a fully functioning mainnet solution, use the product. Demo it. See if it's something that, before you put your money into, does it actually work? Does it work as intended? Or is there actually a future in which it could work? And if so, then I would dive in a little bit deeper to kind of see what the situation is. Another thing you could really do is watching interviews or going to conferences with some of these founders where they're speaking. A lot of founders now for these projects will have interviews on YouTube. I've gotten a chance to interview a bunch of founders. And I've also gone to conferences where I've seen founders speak. And sometimes you just get the feeling like somebody is just full of it. Or alternatively, they're a genius and you just want to get behind them. It's kind of an either or scenario, but you don't know that until you actually can either look that person in the eye over a computer screen, or even preferably, if you go to a lot of these conferences, the founders there, you can go up to them, you can talk to them, you can ask them questions, you can question them, you can grill them a little bit, and they'll respond. They kind of have to. So that's one thing that I really like doing as well. Performing a background check on the team, it's just kind of jokingly saying that, but there are so many fantastic projects in the space. There are also a lot that have no positive intentions whatsoever, and they're just straight up money grabs. It's pretty easy to tell if you look at a project and that person has had nothing to do with crypto until, I don't know, September, August, whatever time frame it was, and they just pop on the scene. So go through that process as well. Checking the social media accounts. This is one thing that you can do to really gauge interest in a project. Go on Twitter, go on Reddit, see the subreddits, see what they're looking at. And one thing I like to do as well is the Telegram groups. It's hard to scroll through a Telegram group now, especially some of them. Like, I think Polymath had 50,000 people in the Telegram group. Every other post is one moon. The answer is I have no idea, but I want to scroll through and find out some other information besides one moon for Polymath. So what I like to do with Telegram too is using the web version of it, just because it's like, if you're sitting on an iPhone scrolling through one moon, one token release, one exchange, it gets tough. And the web version is a little bit better and you can kind of scroll through things a little bit easier. And then one of the last things too, if you have a software development background, if you are an engineer, evaluate the tech as much as you possibly can. If you have that background, that is such a massive advantage when you're looking at things. If you don't, try to leverage as much of the existing resources as you can. Something I recommend checking out, it's a newer website, but cryptomiso.com. It tracks GitHub related activity for a lot of the crypto projects out there. Most of the projects have a GitHub where you can kind of see how active they are in development. It's not 100% spot on, but if you put your money in a project and they haven't had a GitHub update in 9 months, you might want to reevaluate that. So what I look for in a white paper, again, this is like one of the bigger things that I look at like right away. Before I do anything else, I look at the white paper and I'll read the white paper. If it's, like I said, if it's an upcoming ICO, if it is a project that's been around for a while, I still think it's helpful to read the white paper. Even if you're not investing in, even if you don't plan to invest in it, it helps to build your knowledge around the crypto space in general. So one of the first things I look at is the actual roadmap. Like, how far away is this project from coming to fruition? How early did they start it? And you do want to dive into that in a little bit more detail, because there's a lot of projects out there that were like thrown together last month and they're like, yeah, we've been in development since 2012. No, you haven't. Like, you're not kidding anybody. So look at the roadmap, see if this is some random moonshot project. Most are, but see if it's a random moonshot project with a roadmap that can starts really in 2022, or if it's something that actually has actionable steps on the agenda for the next 6 months, 12 months, and things like that. Another thing to do is looking at the team and the advisory board. Like I said, this is one area where after you look at the roadmap, kind of get comfortable with that, look at the team and the advisory board. You can tell pretty quickly if a team is legit or not. Check LinkedIn, go on their LinkedIn accounts, check their Twitter accounts, Google search all of them. I've seen a lot of like false information when it comes to There has to be 700 Ethereum founders, because every ICO out there is like Joe Schmo, the Ethereum founder. It's like, was he Ethereum founder, or was he like the janitor in the office when Ethereum was first putting things together? You don't know, but you have to do the due diligence to figure it out. Another aspect of it is actually doing like a little bit of research on the token model and the token economics of the project. So see if the token is actually useful. Is there any use behind it? Is it simply like a discount token? Is there utility behind it? Are they just doing this because they can't raise money through traditional fundraising? Try to find why anybody would actually buy that token, and if there's really a true reason to do so. I think that is a big helpful thing there as well. And then the token sale and proceeds. Is the founding team keeping 90% of the money for themselves and you're holding a 10% bag? It's possible. If you don't read the white paper, you're not going to see that pie chart with the token distribution. What are they using that for? Are they using that to drive new Lambos, or are they actually putting that money to hopefully good use with software development, community building, things like that? And then can you determine any direct, indirect competitors? That's something that's usually nice when you can look at that to determine direct and indirect competitors. You can see, hey, if I'm looking at this white paper and maybe their valuation is $25 million, I think they have a stronger team than their direct competitor, but the direct competitor's valued at $500 million. Is that an opportunity for me to either invest in that or evaluate that further? That's something that I think looking at direct competitors, indirect competitors, you can glean that information from the white paper and figure that out. Sometimes it'll even be listed. And this is an example. I don't know if we have any titanium investors here. Anybody getting that titanium ICO? Sorry if you did. So I tweeted about this a couple days ago. I did a little bit of research. I saw people on YouTube and Twitter talking about titanium is the best. Titanium is the best. I look at the white paper. It's like a 15-page white paper with like no information in it whatsoever. I check the team. The team has really no blockchain experience whatsoever. And then I go and I check the CEO's Twitter account. And I just scroll through, see what his background is. On August 14th, his first ever tweet about cryptocurrency, is, I just came up with a new idea for an initial coin offering, blockchain developers needed, stay tuned. If that's your first tweet as a founder about a cryptocurrency, run for the damn hills, because that is the biggest sign of a money grab. I was just shocked to go back and see that. And the end result of something like that is that a couple days ago, on February 22nd, that same company that raised $20, $30 million, $40 million through an ICO got hacked for all of their crypto and is now forking or trying to do a hard fork from bar to T-bar because they lost all of their own money and now the investors are paying for it. So that's something that if you do a little bit of diligence kind of on the back end sometimes, if you're just hypercritical of projects, like be very critical of projects because not everybody is out for your best interest. The founder might be the greatest guy in the world, but he raised $30 million. Now that $30 million is gone. So who's paying for that? Probably you. And one thing I would say as well is just play in your strengths. So like I said, I don't have a technical analysis background. I'm not a software engineer. I know things at a high level from an information systems perspective, but I try to play to my strengths as much as possible. And I figure out what I'm good at and what I just have no clue with. And the best thing to do there is to build up a network and fill your weaknesses with help from others. So there's people you meet here that have a different skill set than you. If you meet a software engineer, if you meet somebody who has an idea from a regulatory perspective, they're a lawyer, build your network as much as possible and actually reach out to those people, bounce ideas off them. That's what I've done. It's been helpful for me just being in New York City. There's a lot of crypto interest here. So I've developed a fairly decent sized network. But I can reach out to people and say, hey, this project looks great or this project looks fishy. What are your thoughts on it? Would you put money in this ICO or would you invest in this? And they'll tell me straight up. And having that network to fill in the gaps where you're not strong is a massive, massive help. And the last thing I would recommend too is just using a framework. There are a couple existing ones out there. There's one called Spacesuit X. I believe it's spacesuitx.org. I've talked about this one a little bit previously. Bruce Fenton, who is a crypto investor, put this together. You can go to their website and you can essentially score cryptocurrency projects based upon an existing category. Gives it a score of 1 out of 100. And then somebody on Twitter that I was talking a little bit about this, but somebody named Tony Shang, I think he works at Google, put together this like fairly interesting diagram as far as, it's like a flow chart. And you go through the process, you go through the roadmap here, and try to check off the boxes. You see, you know, is the project strong? Is there an idea risk? Is the token quality high? Is there a lot of utility behind it? And try to check those boxes. And if any of those don't meet your criteria, either don't invest or don't put your money behind it, or shy away from the project. So trying to use a framework, or if you don't like any of the existing ones, create your own. Find out what works well for you, and use that to just make better decisions based upon projects. And I'll just turn it over now to if anybody has a couple of questions here. I don't know how much time we have left, but if anybody has any specific questions, anything I just said, would love to take a few of them. Mining is it's interesting. It's a totally different topic. You have to have a little bit of expertise. I would say the one thing a lot of people promote, cloud mining. I would not touch that really with a 10-foot pole. Cloud mining is it's not the best, but if you're interested in GPU mining or ASIC mining with Bitcoin or some of the other ones, I think there's a lot more research that you can do about it. It's I would start small though, because if you go out and you purchase $20,000 worth of mining equipment, you don't know what you're doing. There's a decent chance that mining equipment might not be so efficient in 2 months if Bitmain releases a new ASIC miner or something like that. So there's a lot of research around that that you can definitely do.
I want to be as secure as possible.
Yeah.
And I have a Trezor and Ledger. But then I hear Trace Meyer talking about Masternode and Ice Glacier. And is that super hard to set up, or is that something that, you know, the normal layman can start learning to do? And is that something we need to do?
So Masternodes are another interesting topic. That's something that if you have a friend that's ever set up a Masternode, I would look to that. Or there's some decent resources. Some of the companies that are some of the projects that have Masternodes in place now are taking a lot of steps to like walk people through very specific tutorials, because everybody, if there's, it's the worst project in the world, but if it has a Masternode, people freak out about it because, you know, passive income. So try to see what type of resources are out there. But if you have a friend that's done that before, I would try and reach out to them as much as possible, and just kind of start, like with everything in crypto, start slow, because if you make a mistake, there's no customer support number that you're calling up saying, hey, I didn't set up my Masternode right, and I sent $20,000 worth of some token to it, and now it's gone. Not getting that back. So as far as like the exchanges doing diligence on the cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, that they add. Can you trust their judgment on the coins that they add, that they're worth investing in?
Yeah, so my thought is exchanges are a for-profit business, and they're going to do what's in their best interest, and they make money off fees. Centralized exchanges make a ton of money off fees. If you see Binance, the founder of Binance went from not being that relevant to 7 months later on the front cover of Forbes and a billionaire. And that's from trading fees. So they're going to list crypto assets or tokens, whatever, that are going to make them money. At the same point in time, they're not going to list, for the most part, a lot of times they're not going to list everything, because there are regulatory issues, there are legal issues, there are compliance issues. So a good exchange, at least in like, you know, I like Binance, I like Bittrex. But just because something is listed on Binance or Bittrex doesn't necessarily mean that's any indication that you should buy it, or that they're like doing some level of due diligence that's like, this is safe for an investor. That's not necessarily the case. But myself personally, I use Bittrex and Binance for the most part when it comes to centralized exchanges. Question back there. Can you kind of restate the back end of that question?
Yeah, sure. So like, where is your first source of information when you're looking for new projects? Mm-hmm. Is it a good YouTube interviewer, or if your Twitter handle is providing new information, where are your initial sources?
So, yeah, sure. So if it's before it's hitting an exchange, it's likely a recent ICO. So it depends upon if you got in on the ICO, if you did not get in on the ICO. A lot of times I'll just kind of filter that through my network personally. There's other good websites like Smith & Crown is decent from like an ICO perspective. ICO rating is okay. There's a lot of stuff that you personally have to filter if you're just going to use those websites, though, because there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ICOs that are coming up, and determine the one or two that might actually be worth your time. That's a difficult process, so it's not always easy to go through that. But I try and filter that through my kind of network as much as possible to see something like WanChain. It's like everybody in the world is talking about WanChain. When's it going to hit the exchanges? And then if you develop a strategy, if you really want to invest in that token or something like that.
What are your thoughts on that Facebook banning the crypto ads and ICO ads, and as a YouTube partner, has it affected you at all, and what do you think about that decision?
It means that I get to see less of James Altucher on a regular basis, and I'm very happy about that. No, I mean, I really don't think it's a bad thing for the most part. Like, I think some people in the crypto space were like, how dare Facebook do that? I really don't care. That's just me personally, but like, for the most part, it was scammy ICOs that were running the ads, or it was James Altucher saying, hey, here's the three next Bitcoin that are going to moon 27,000.65% in the next 2 days, sign up for my newsletter, and then I'll sell you a $5,000 course in the back end. So I don't think it makes that much of a difference personally. I think people are going to try and do what's right to protect investors. And in some cases, like we've seen with BitConnect, there are people that just don't know any better. And that's really unfortunate that they might be throwing money away into a project that just has no fundamentals. I do both. It depends upon, sometimes there's only ETH pairings available. Sometimes it doesn't really make a super big difference for me. Most of the times the prices are pretty much comparable. And it just depends upon like what I'm trying to maybe move out of. But I don't think there's a massive difference for me. I think a lot of people, the bigger debate there is probably whether people are calculating gains on a USD perspective or on a Bitcoin standpoint. Because when Bitcoin's crushing it, or when Bitcoin's crushing it, everybody's talking about, oh, but are you gaining versus Bitcoin? And then when Bitcoin's taking a dive, it's like, oh, well, I'm still up in USD, so I'm okay. That's the big, I think, question, kind of maybe more so than like the ETH to BTC trading pairings.
Decentralized exchanges, and what is the future for all of them?
I'm very positive on the decentralized exchanges. I'm extremely interested in seeing them succeed. I think when you see something like Coincheck losing $500 million of NEM, or BitGrail just having no idea what they're doing and losing a bunch of Nano for people, and just crushing the price of Nano, even if you didn't personally lose yours, there's a lot of things that, and if you go back in history too, you got Mt. Gox. There's a lot of different centralized exchange issues. Every single time that happens, I think that's another checkmark or like a boost for decentralized exchanges. I do think that there's like, from a liquidity perspective and from a usability perspective, it's not there yet. But there is going to be a point in time where I do think decentralized exchanges are going to be a very big part of the crypto ecosystem.
I was wondering, have you done any arbitrage between exchanges, because since there's price differences, and also for like as regular people who don't have expertise in like high frequency arbitrage, is there still chances that we can take advantage of arbitrage between exchanges?
Typically, I'd say no, unless you have a significant amount of money on multiple exchanges and you really understand what you're doing. It sounds great in theory. Like, I remember when I started off, I would see like the price of one crypto on one exchange at being like, 100 Satoshis, and then you see it 120 Satoshis on another exchange. You're like, wow, I'm going to make 20% profit. I'll just flip this. But there's reasons that arbitrage exists. Like, whether you look at the price in Korea right now, usually being higher than for Bitcoin, the price in the US, there are reasons that arbitrage exists in terms of actually getting your money out of Korea that make a lot of difficulties. So for the most part, unless you are, I don't want to say just an institutional investor, but unless you have a significant amount of capital on multiple exchanges and you really understand what you're doing, the arbitrage opportunities look great on paper, but for the average investor, I think it's something that's a lot harder to actually make money on than you might think. Go right in front.
Bobby, decentralized exchange.
Sure.
What do you think the regulations are going to be after that? are we going to be in a tough position after that?
I think it's an interesting question because the question is, who do you regulate? If it's there's protocols and there's relayers in some cases. So that's one of the big questions is who do you regulate? How is that regulated? Because there really isn't a central figure in a lot of cases behind the decentralized exchanges. The centralized exchanges are on the other end of the spectrum, kind of the complete opposite of that. You've seen Coinbase sending out emails yesterday about the 13,000 accounts that they had to fork over to the IRS after they got sued by the IRS. So I think that's one of the interesting questions about regulation and decentralized exchanges, but I don't know how that's going to play out at all.
Thanks. Something I've done recently for my YouTube channel is created a custom ERC-20 token to help reward users for watching the videos during giveaways. Is this something that you would consider doing for your channel, and do you think other YouTube channels will follow suit?
I probably personally would not. I'm a pretty conservative dude from like a regulatory and perspective. So I don't know if that's something that could be deemed a security. And if I'm the one creating it, I'd be petrified to have any involvement with it. But I mean, there are a lot of interesting platforms that are coming out from like a media perspective, whether it's Steam, DTube. I worked with a company called Props that's doing something from like a kind of a competitor to YouTube Live where they have their own tokens. So there's a lot of different companies that are, I think, trying to fill the gap or like the perceived gaps with YouTube from a monetization standpoint. But I haven't experimented with create. And even Steam, I think, is creating smart media tokens, which are kind of similar to creating your own ERC-20 token to monetize.
I just want to get your perspective on when buying ICOs. Some ICOs, they don't require you to be whitelisted, but others require you to go through whitelisting, like recently with BePower. And then all of a sudden, later on, you don't get qualified. So what do they do with the data? Because supposedly, not all would get that, but why would some get it? And if you don't get included, what's their obligation? Are they required to delete that data?
So, I mean, I would think that happens on an individual basis. I know some companies have like publicized that they are deleting the personal data. The one thing I would say about ICOs is if you're a non-accredited investor in the US, ICO investing is basically dead. That's my personal opinion. But if anybody in the US is offering an ICO to non-accredited US investors, the chairman of the SEC basically came out and said every single ICO I've ever seen is a security. And the question isn't what they're going to do in the future. I think the bigger question is, are they retroactively going to enforce ICO regulation in the past? But if every ICO ever is a security and you're offering securities to non-accredited U.S. investors as a U.S. company or as a company in a different jurisdiction, that's going to be an issue. And you've seen actions happen with a couple different companies like Munchie, which was based out of San Francisco, and a couple other ones. So I think unless you're a foreign citizen or unless you're an accredited investor, it's going to be tough to participate in ICOs in the future.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, everybody.